Welcome back to the Deep Dive, the place where we turn massive stacks of complex sources into clean, actionable knowledge. I'm Mel Vuksen.
And I'm Tommy Pearson. It's great to be here.
Today, we're tackling something really foundational. It's about security, trust, and the speed of government operations.
Absolutely. The source material we've synthesized, it digs deep into a core security crisis facing U.S. federal agencies. It's complex, technically, but also, you know, absolutely mission critical.
Definitely. So let's officially state the focus for this deep dive. It's titled, Why U.S. Federal Agencies Should Adopt Reversing Labs to Meet Initiatives, Mandates, and Mission Requirements to Secure and Accelerate Speed to Mission.
Right. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it gets right to the point. The core challenge, the mission for the listener to grasp, is that federal agencies, especially folks like the Department of Defense, they're under intense pressure.
Pressure stemming from what, specifically?
Well, largely from catastrophic breaches, things like SolarWinds a few years back. That event really forced a reckoning. It showed the old ways of acquiring and building software just weren't cutting it.
So the goal is a fundamental shift.
Exactly. Moving away from what was essentially a trust-based compliance model, you know, hoping vendors were doing the right thing, towards something completely different.
Towards verifiable security.
Precisely. Verifiable automated security. And the ultimate aim, the reason this matters so much, particularly for the DoD, is achieving what they call mission velocity. Getting capabilities out faster but safely.
That pivot seems huge, from trust to verification.
It is, because that old mindset that we trust this vendor, they're big, they're reputable, well, SolarWinds killed that, completely dead.
So the challenge now is more technical.
Yes. How does an agency get definitive proof, like actual binary level proof, that the software package they're about to deploy is clean?
Whether it's running, say, a drone for a warfighter.
Or processing sensitive patient health records at HHS, or even managing parts of the power grid. How do you know for sure it's 100% free of malware, hidden backdoors, or, you know, malicious tampering?
That really sets the stage. High stakes indeed. So let's unpack that systemic failure first. It really puts everything else into context. And we have to start with SolarWinds in 2020. You mentioned it was a catalyst.
Oh, it was more than a catalyst. It was the definitive proof that implicit trust in the software supply chain was, frankly, fatally flawed.
A wake-up call, as you said.
Of the highest order. And what made it so different, so alarming, was how it happened. This wasn't, you know, someone clicking a phishing link or a vendor forgetting to patch a known vulnerability.
No, this was a nation-state level attack.
Exactly. A sophisticated adversary managed to compromise the vendor's own internal development systems, their build environment.
And the critical part was injecting the malware, Sunburst, right?
Yes, injecting it directly into what looked like perfectly legitimate software updates. Signed updates, even.
So the Orion software, the product itself, it looked fine to all the standard security tools at the time.
Completely fine. Because the attackers didn't target the code in the way traditional tools look for flaws. They targeted the process of building the software.
Oh.
And that allowed this malicious payload to just sail through the existing security checks. Because the model was based on, you know, vendor reputation checklists. If the vendor said we're secure, agencies basically had to take their word for it.
That's a huge vulnerability.
Massive. And the government response, understandably, was equally massive. It led directly to the foundational mandates we're dealing with now.
Starting with Executive Order 138.
Right. EO 14028, Improving the Nation's Cybersecurity, issued in May 2021. That order mandated sweeping changes across the board.
Things like enhancing software supply chain security.
Adopting zero trust architectures, standardizing security requirements for federal systems. It was a really broad directive.
But directives need teeth, right? They need to be operationalized.
Absolutely. And that's where the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, came in, specifically with Memorandum M2218.
Okay, M2218. How did that connect to the EO?
It basically turned the EO's policy goals into actual contractual obligations. It put the requirements into practice.
So what was the key requirement in M2218?
The big one was the self-attestation. It established this hard requirement that any software producer selling to the U.S. government must provide a formal declaration.
Attesting to what?
Attesting that their products adhere to secure development practices. And it specifically referenced the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, guidelines, the Secure Software Development Framework, the SSDF.
So the vendor has to attest, essentially pinky promise, that they followed the rules.
Yes, but it's a contractual promise now. The burden of proof is technically on the vendor.
But the agency still has the obligation and the liability, really, to make sure that attestation is valid.
That's the crux of it. And this is where we hit what our sources call the great disconnect, the gap between vulnerability management and actual threat detection.
The vulnerability versus threat gap. Explain that.
Okay, so think about the intent behind the mandates. EO 14728, the NIST, SSDF, they were written directly because of SolarWinds. They aim to stop active threats.
Like malware, backdoors, malicious tampering.
Yeah.
The stuff SolarWinds actually was.
Exactly. But now look at the tools that most federal agencies were, and often still are, primarily using. Things like static application security testing, SATH, and software composition analysis, SCA.
What do those tools actually find?
They're designed to find vulnerabilities, potential weaknesses. SAS is great at finding coding bugs, like, say, a buffer overflow or maybe some unvalidated input in the source code.
Okay.
And SCA is good at identifying known, publicly disclosed vulnerabilities, CVEs, in the open source components or libraries used in the software.
So they find flaws that could be exploited.
Could be, yes. Potential flaws. But here's the critical point. They completely miss the intentional attack. The SolarWinds malware wasn't a coding flaw or a known CVE.
Right, you said it was like a feature maliciously inserted.
Oh, precisely. It was inserted later during the build phase. So this creates a dangerous situation. An agency's CISO can get a report from their ST and SCA tools.
And the report can come back clean.
Totally clean. Zero coding bugs found, zero known CVEs in the libraries. They look compliant on paper. But they could still be 100% compromised by a SolarWinds-style attack.
Because the tools aren't looking for that kind of threat.
They're fundamentally blind to it. They look for known weaknesses, mostly in source code. They don't analyze the final compiled package for intentionally embedded malicious payloads or tampering that happens after the code is written.
That's a really profound gap. It means you can check all the compliance boxes.
Check all the boxes, follow the process.
And still be completely insecure against the very threat the mandates were designed to stop.
That's the disconnect. And it leads us directly to the next big issue. The Software Bill of Materials, or SBOM.
The SBOM. That's been pushed heavily by CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency.
Right. And the idea behind it is transparency. An SBOM is basically an inventory, a list of all the components, commercial libraries, open source packages inside a piece of software.
In theory, that sounds useful. Essential, even.
In theory, yes. But our sources consistently point out that in practice, it's often become just another checkbox exercise.
He is that. If I have the ingredients list, doesn't that help?
It helps, but it's not enough. Because the SBOM by itself is just that, a list. It cannot verify the integrity of the components on that list. It doesn't tell you if something's been maliciously changed or if it behaves differently than expected.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Let's take a scenario. Imagine, say, the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. They're procuring a new electronic health record system, an EHR.
Okay.
They receive an SBOM with the software, and it's fully compliant with the format standards. It lists all the components, including, let's say, a common Java framework like Spring, a specific version.
So what happens next?
Well, the agency runs its standard SCA tool. The tool checks the name Spring Framework Version XYZ against the National Vulnerability Database, the NVD.
And if that version has no known CVEs?
The tool gives a green light. Compliant, checkbox ticked.
But what's missing?
What's missing is the answer to the real security question the HHS team needs to ask, which isn't just, is this component name on a vulnerability list, but rather,
has this specific Spring framework file, the actual compiled JIR file inside this EHR installer package, been tampered with?
Exactly. Or does it contain some subtle hidden malware that wasn't present when the vendor originally built it?
So the tools validate the name on the list,
but not the integrity or the threat profile of the actual binary file that's about to be deployed. You have the manifest, but you can't validate the shipment. That's the SBOM gap.
Okay, so we need to move beyond just listing components. We need to prove the integrity of the actual software artifact that gets shipped and deployed.
We need a way to look inside that final package after everything's been built and put together.
Like a final exam for software integrity.
That's a great way to put it. And that need, the need for verifiable post-build integrity analysis, is precisely where the Reversing Labs platform comes in. Its entire architecture is designed to close both that vulnerability versus threat gap and the SBOM gap.
How does it do that?
By performing deep forensic analysis directly on the final software binary.
The binary being the compiled executable code, the thing that actually runs.
Yes. The .exe, the .dll, the .jar, the firmware image, Whatever the final artifact is that the agency deploys, that's the ground truth of the system after all the coding, compiling, linking, and packaging is done.
So analyzing the binary is like checking the final product off the assembly line.
Exactly. It's the final exam because it inherently verifies the integrity of the entire development and build process up to that point, including the build system itself, which is where SolarWinds was compromised.
If a sophisticated attack injects malware late in the game,
analyzing the final binary is the single best choke point to definitively detect it. It sees the end result of the whole process.
Okay, let's get into the technical details then. You mentioned AI-driven complex binary analysis. How does that actually work, and what makes it different?
So the core is a proprietary analysis engine. The first key point is that it deconstructs and analyzes the software binary without actually executing it. It's static analysis, but on the binary, not the source.
Why is avoiding execution so important, especially for government agencies?
Because modern targeted malware is incredibly evasive. It often includes checks to see if it's running in a sandbox or an analysis environment. If it detects analysis, it might not reveal its malicious behavior. Analyzing statically avoids triggering those evasion techniques.
So it's not running the potentially malicious code, and it's not just reading the original source code either. It's reverse engineering the compiled artifact.
At massive scale, yes.
Yeah.
And that scale is crucial for defeating obfuscation. Nation-state actors, sophisticated criminals, they don't just drop malware in plain sight. They use complex packing, encryption, custom loaders, weird file formats to hide their payloads deep inside legitimate-looking software.
So the analysis needs to peel back all those layers.
Right. The Reversing Labs engine is designed to recursively unpack over 400 different file formats. Think archives, installers, virtual machine images, firmware containers, custom packers used by malware authors.
400. Wow.
And within those packages, it can identify over 4,800 distinct file types. This comprehensive forensic unpacking is what provides, ideally, 100% visibility into the actual contents, the ground truth of that final build artifact. If there's a malicious file hidden five layers deep inside an installer, the goal is to find it.
So if traditional tools are blind to threats injected late in the lifecycle during the build, the packaging this binary analysis is designed specifically to catch those.
Exactly. It sees what's actually in the package being delivered.
What are the main types of threats this process specifically looks for?
Our sources highlight three critical areas. First, and most obviously, is malware. Detecting the actual presence of malicious code, like the Sunburst payload in SolarWinds, hidden inside a seemingly legitimate component.
Okay, malware detection. What's second?
Second is tampering. This is about identifying unauthorized changes to files within the package. This could be intentional tampering by an attacker who compromised the build system, or it could even be accidental changes that indicate a broken or non-reproducible build process. Either way, it's a critical integrity failure.
Makes sense. Malware and tampering, what's the third area?
The third is exposed secrets. This is a huge, often overlooked problem. Things like credentials, passwords, API keys, private encryption keys, they frequently get accidentally hard-coded or embedded into the final software binary during the build process.
Even if they weren't in the original source code.
Right. They might come from build scripts, environment variables, configuration files that get compiled in. Finding these secrets baked into the final artifact is critical because they're basically golden keys for attackers. Reversing Labs specifically flags and prioritizes this risk.
Malware, tampering, exposed secrets, all found by analyzing the final binary. Okay, so we have the core technology. How does this translate into a solution that federal agencies can actually use to meet those mandates and close the SBOM gap?
That's where Spectra Assure comes in. It's the product that operationalizes this complex binary analysis specifically for software supply chain security, or SSCS. It's designed to directly solve that SBOM gap we talked about.
And the key output from Spectra Assure is something called the SAFE report.
Yes. The SAFE report is meant to be much more than just an SBOM inventory list. While Spectra Assure does generate compliant SBOMs, it supports standard formats like CycloneDX and SPDX. The SAFE report adds the crucial security context on top of that inventory, the context that the mandates implicitly require, but SBOMs alone don't provide.
What kind of security context are we talking about?
It includes the results from that deep binary analysis we just discussed. So you get a clear threat verdict. Is there known malware present? This uses, I believe, 16 proprietary malware detection engines, not just signature matches.
16 engines, okay.
It flags any identified tampering or integrity issues. It provides a detailed, prioritized list of any exposed secrets found baked into the binaries. And importantly, it also contextualizes vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Instead of just listing every single potential CVE found in every component, which can be overwhelming noise, it focuses on the risks that are actually present and potentially exploitable within that specific compiled binary package being analyzed. It helps prioritize.
Prioritization sounds key.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the federal DevSecOps teams, the software factories.
Mm-hmm.
They're already struggling with alert fatigue from existing tools. How do you introduce this powerful final exam without it just becoming another bottleneck, adding more friction?
That's a critical consideration. If a security tool slows down the mission, especially in the DoD, it's often dead on arrival. The platform is designed to address this directly with something called safe levels and remediation roadmaps.
Safe levels, what does that mean?
Instead of just dumping a massive flat list of every potential issue found, Spectra Assure categorizes the findings into clear, actionable risk levels. It provides developers with manageable milestones.
Focus on the biggest risks first.
Exactly. It guides the development teams to tackle the most critical, highest impact risks. First, things like confirmed malware, active tampering, high priority exposed secrets. This allows them to incrementally improve their software supply chain security posture in a way that's designed to be less disruptive to their velocity.
So it's about risk-based guardrails, not just stopping the pipeline for every minor issue.
Precisely. High-fidelity detection focused on real threats, presented in a way that enables remediation without overwhelming the developers with noise.
That focus on efficiency and high-fidelity signals must require a lot of intelligence behind the scenes.
No.
You mentioned Spectra Intelligence earlier, calling it the Rosetta Stone.
Yeah, that nickname comes up a lot in the sources. Spectra Intelligence is the massive data lake and threat intelligence engine that powers the analysis. It's built on what they claim is the world's largest threat repository.
How large are we talking?
The numbers are staggering, tracking over 422 billion searchable files. This isn't just theoretical data, it's reputational data for a huge portion of the files circulating globally.
Okay, 422 billion files. That's massive. But the sources emphasize something else as the unique differentiator for Spectra Intelligence. It's not just about tracking malware.
Right. It's the focus on goodware, maintaining what they claim is the industry's largest database of known good files.
Why is tracking good files so important? How does that help a Federal Security Operations Center, a SOC?
It fundamentally changes the game for SOC analysts, whether at CISA, the FBI, or within a specific agency. Their biggest daily battle is often alert fatigue caused by false positives.
Tools flagging legitimate files as suspicious.
Exactly. Traditional security tools often flag files simply because they're new, uncommon, or look slightly different from a known version, even if they're perfectly legitimate. This creates a huge amount of noise.
And the analyst has to waste time investigating these, trying to prove they're not malicious.
Which is incredibly time-consuming and inefficient. The known good database effectively eliminates the vast majority of this noise. Because Reversing Labs has such a huge corpus of known good files, their platform can often provide a decisive high-fidelity verdict very quickly.
So it can say this is definitely malicious, but also.
Just as importantly, it can say with high confidence, this file is 100% known good, signed by a trusted vendor, we've seen it millions of times, you can ignore it.
That must have a huge impact on SOC efficiency and cost.
It's described as transformational. By cutting out the noise, sometimes 80-90% of alerts can be false positives. It drastically reduces analyst workload, slashes investigation time, and dramatically improves metrics like mean time to respond or MTTR.
Freeing up those highly skilled analysts to focus on the real threats.
Exactly. It moves the SOC from constantly chasing ghosts to confidently triaging and responding to genuine incidents.
Okay, so we've established the core technology binary analysis and the intelligence that powers it, providing this verifiable assurance. Now let's connect this back to the why. How does this foundation help federal agencies achieve their critical objectives? The sources frame this around four pillars of federal software assurance. Let's start with pillar one, secure acquisition, or as they call it, buy safe.
Right. Pillar one is all about vetting the software agencies buy commercial off-the-shelf COTS software, other third-party components, open-source libraries they consume. The challenge here is enormous because the government relies heavily on external software.
And the traditional vetting process is problematic.
It's often described as too slow and shallow. It typically relies on vendor questionnaires, self-attestations, basically, that old trust model we talked about.
But the federal mandates, like the NIST Guidance on Cybersecurity Supply Chain Risk Management, CSCRM, they demand more now.
They demand a verify, don't trust approach. Agencies are now required to actively validate the security of the software they procure. But here's the massive roadblock for CIOT's software.
The vendor won't give you the source code.
Almost never. It's their proprietary intellectual property. So how do you verify the security of a black box if you can't see inside?
This seems like where the binary analysis becomes essential.
It's the absolute key enabler for this pillar. Spectra assures ability to perform that deep forensic analysis on the binary without needing the source code is what makes effective CSCRM possible for third-party software in the federal space. If you can only look at the vendor's paperwork and not the actual product, you're still just trusting, not verifying.
The impact on acquisition speed must be significant too. Federal procurement is notoriously slow.
Huge impact. The sources suggest this kind of automated binary analysis can slash the review time for a new CIOTest product from potentially weeks or even months, using manual methods and questionnaires down to hours.
Hours instead of weeks, that's a massive efficiency gain.
It's cited as potentially a 1,000% increase in efficiency for the vetting part of the process. So agencies can strengthen their security by actually finding malware or tampering before deployment, while also dramatically accelerating the acquisition and approval timeline. That's hitting mission velocity right in the procurement phase.
Okay, that covers buying software safely. Let's move to pillar two, secure development or build safe. This is about securing the software the government builds itself, right? In their DevSecOps pipelines, the software factories.
Exactly. This focuses on agencies like the DoD's Platform One or Kessel Run, GSA's software initiatives, internal development teams across civilian agencies. They're building critical applications, often using modern, fast-paced DevSecOps practices.
What's the main challenge for them?
Friction. Security tools, especially traditional SaaS and SEA tools integrated into the CI/CD pipeline, can really slow things down. They often break the build or, as we discussed, flood developers with noisy low-priority alerts.
Forcing a trade-off between speed and security.
Often, yes. And velocity is paramount for these software factories trying to deliver capability rapidly. Plus, the CI/CD pipeline itself is a major attack target now. We saw that with incidents like the Kotkoff breach.
Right, where attackers compromised a tool used in the development process to inject malware downstream.
Precisely. So you need security within the pipeline, but it has to be effective without killing speed.
So how does Spectra Assure fit in here? As that final exam again.
Yes, it acts as that final verification gate, typically positioned towards the end of the CI/CD pipeline after the software is built and packaged. By analyzing the final artifact, it verifies the integrity of the entire preceding process.
Ensuring no malware was injected during the build, no tampering occurred, no secrets got baked in accidentally.
Exactly. It validates the output of the whole pipeline.
And critically, does it help with the compliance burden? Generating the evidence needed for things like the OMB attestation.
Absolutely essential. This is a major pain point for DevSecOps teams manually generating SBOMs, vulnerability reports, risk assessments to satisfy compliance requirements. Spectra Assure automates the generation of validated SBOMs and these detailed risk reports based on the binary analysis.
Providing the verifiable evidence.
The verifiable evidence needed to comply with the NIST Secure Software Development Framework practices like protecting the build environment, PS1, archiving verification data, PS3, verifying component integrity, RV8023. And crucially, this automated evidence generation directly supports the self-attestation required by OMB M2218. It takes the burden off the developers.
Okay, so we've covered buying safe and building safe. Pillar three is secure operations, or stay safe.
Yeah.
This sounds like it's focused on the defenders, the SOCs, CISA, forensic teams.
Correct. This pillar addresses the needs of the operational cybersecurity teams who are defending federal networks day in, day out. People at CISA, the FBI Cyber Division, agency-level SOCs, and digital forensics and incident response DFIR teams.
And their main challenge is just the sheer volume of potential threats.
Inundation is putting it mildly. Think about CISA's binding operational directive, BOD 23-1. It mandates continuous monitoring, asset discovery, vulnerability detection across federal civilian networks. This means agencies need the capacity to analyze literally millions of files every single day.
Every email attachment, every web download, every executable that crosses the network?
Essentially, yes. High-volume, high-speed analysis is now a baseline requirement.
How does the Reversing Labs platform scale to meet that kind of demand?
The sources describe a multi-part solution for operations. First, there's SpectroDetect. This is the component designed for that high-volume, high-speed inspection. It can be deployed to analyze millions of files per day coming from various network sensors, email gateways, web proxies, cloud storage, endpoint detection tools. It provides that continuous visibility needed for BOD 23001 compliance.
Okay, so Detect handles the high-volume triage. What happens when it finds something really suspicious or confirmed malicious?
Then the analyst needs to pivot quickly into deep dive forensics, and that's where Spectra Analyze comes in. It's described as an instant malware lab.
A malware lab in a box.
Sort of. It's a sophisticated workbench that automates many of the complex, time-consuming tasks involved in reverse engineering malware, unpacking, code analysis, identifying behaviors. It can save forensic experts potentially weeks of manual effort on a single complex sample.
That sounds powerful. Is there anything unique about Analyze for the federal space?
Yes. A crucial detail highlighted in the sources is its privacy controls. Spectra Analyze can be deployed as a completely private workbench on-premise or even in an air-gapped environment.
Why is that private deployment option so critical for, say, law enforcement or intelligence agencies?
Because they often deal with extremely sensitive files. Think about the DOJ or FBI investigating a case. The files they analyze might contain protected personally identifiable information, PII, classified national security data, or critical evidence for a criminal prosecution.
And they absolutely cannot upload that kind of data to a public cloud sandbox for analysis.
Legally and operationally, it's a non-starter. They need to maintain strict chain of custody and control over sensitive evidence. Spectra Analyze's ability to run as a private, self-contained instance is specifically designed to meet that essential requirement for law enforcement, counterintelligence, and other sensitive missions.
That makes sense. A really key differentiator for those specific use cases. Mm-hmm. And how does Spectra Intelligence fit into the Stay Safe pillar?
It acts as the enrichment layer for their existing security tools. The high-fidelity verdicts, malicious or known good from Spectra Intelligence, can be fed into their SIM platforms like Splunk or Microsoft Sentinel and their SOAR tools.
Cutting through the noise generated by other tools.
Exactly. By providing definitive verdicts and eliminating false positives, it dramatically improves the efficiency of the SOC, accelerates their mean time to respond, MTTR, and lets their analysts focus their energy on the threats that actually matter.
Okay, that covers secure operations. Now, the final pillar, pillar four, secure mission or accelerate safe. This one sounds like it ties directly back to that concept of mission velocity, particularly for the DoD. It's about enabling continuous ATO.
Yes, this is arguably the most transformative pillar, especially within the Department of Defense. The traditional authority to operate, or ATO, process is widely seen as the single biggest bottleneck slowing down the delivery of new technology and capabilities to warfighters.
How slow are we talking?
The sources consistently mention ATOs taking anywhere from 6 months to, incredibly, sometimes 2 or even 3 years to complete. It's a heavily manual, paper-based compliance exercise.
Which is completely out of sync with modern software development, where you might have updates daily or weekly.
Totally incompatible. Modern warfare requires continuous updates, continuous capability delivery. The static, multi-year ATO process is a relic that hinders readiness.
So the push is towards continuous ATO, or CATO. What does that involve?
CATO shifts the model from periodic static reviews to continuous monitoring and ongoing authorization. The idea is that if you can continuously monitor the security posture of a system, the authorization can remain valid as long as the posture stays within acceptable limits.
But that puts a huge burden on the authorizing official, the AO, right? The person who signs off on the risk. How can they grant an ongoing authorization if the software is constantly changing underneath them? They still hold the liability.
They need continuous, trustworthy, verifiable evidence of the system's security state. And this is where Spectra Assure becomes the key technological enabler for CATO, according to the sources.
How does it enable CATO?
By integrating directly into the DevSecOps pipeline, the Build Safe pillar Spectra Assure can continuously generate the required audit artifacts every time a new build or update is pushed. It produces real-time reports on the software's risk posture, its integrity, whether any new malware or secrets have appeared.
So instead of the AO getting a binder of paperwork that's already months or years old,
they get a near real-time dashboard or report based on objective binary level analysis of the current version running. They move from relying on historical attestations and promises to ongoing data-driven assurance.
Assurance that the software running that critical mission system right now hasn't been tampered with, doesn't contain new malware, hasn't exposed new secrets.
Precisely. This continuous stream of verifiable evidence gives the AO the confidence they need to grant and, crucially, maintain an ongoing authorization. It transforms the ATO process from a massive bottleneck into an automated, data-driven function of the development pipeline itself.
That really connects the dots. It makes reversing labs not just a security tool, but potentially a platform that directly accelerates mission delivery.
That's the argument. It becomes a mission velocity platform by removing one of the biggest roadblocks, the static ATO, through automated continuous verification.
That framework of the four pillars, buy safe, build safe, stay safe, and accelerate safe, seems to cover the whole life cycle and map directly to the big federal challenges, from EO14038 compliance all the way to enabling Cato.
It provides a unified story. It addresses CSCRM for acquired software, NIST SSDF for built software, the high volume analysis needs for SOCs under BOD 2301, and the continuous evidence generation needed by AOs for Cato. It aims to be the single platform for comprehensive software assurance.
Okay, the technical case and the mission alignment seem very strong based on these sources. Let's pivot now to the practical business strategy. If you're on the Reversing Lab sales team or one of their federal channel partners, how do you effectively approach this huge, complex federal market? Who do you target first, and what's the message?
Great question. Federal sales is its own beast. The absolute first step, according to the materials, is leveraging what they call the procurement easy button. You have to overcome the acquisition hurdles first.
And that easy button is the awardable status they've achieved.
Exactly. This is highlighted as strategically critical. Reversing Labs Spectra Assure has earned these awardable designations from key DoD procurement marketplaces, specifically the DoD Platform 1 P1 Solutions Marketplace and the CDAO Tradewinds Solutions Marketplace.
For listeners maybe not deep in the weeds of DoD contracting, what does awardable status actually mean? Why is it such a big deal?
It means the solution has already gone through a significant vetting process by the DoD. It's been technically reviewed, often competitively evaluated against alternatives, and essentially pre-approved for procurement by a DoD and potentially other federal entities. It signifies that it's post-competition and ready to be awarded a contract relatively quickly.
So it lets agencies bypass the standard, often excruciatingly long federal procurement cycle. The RSPs, the competitive bidding that can take 12, 18 months or more.
Largely, yes. It provides a much faster, lower friction path to getting the technology under contract and into use. It dramatically shortens the sales cycle for those specific agencies covered by the marketplace.
So the strategic message changes fundamentally.
Right. Instead of, please evaluate our technology, the message becomes, the DoD has already evaluated and approved our technology through Platform 1 Tradewinds. Here is the streamlined, pre-approved vehicle to procure it rapidly.
That awardable status needs to be front and center in any conversation with DoD and the intelligence community then.
Absolutely. The sources state this must be the tip of the spear for all DoD and IC sales efforts. And the channel partners, companies like Carahsoft, Norseman Defense Technologies, Mission First Cyber, Vibrant, they need to be fully equipped and enabled to execute these marketplace transactions smoothly and quickly. It's about minimizing bureaucracy.
Okay, so the procurement path is key. Now, who are the key people to talk to? Federal organizations are complex. A one-size-fits-all pitch probably doesn't work. The sources identify three priority personas.
Yes, tailoring the message to the specific concerns of the individual is crucial. Let's start with persona one, the authorizing official, the AO, the ultimate gatekeeper.
What are the AO's primary pain points?
Immense pressure and personal liability. The AO is the senior official who formally accepts the risk for a system by signing the ATO package. They're often perceived as mission blockers because the traditional ATO process is so slow. And they know the data they usually rely on, vendor promises, static reports is often incomplete, outdated, and doesn't really protect against modern supply chain threats. They feel like they're making critical decisions somewhat blind.
So the message needs to offer them confidence and a path to becoming an accelerator, not a blocker.
Precisely. The core message for the AO should be, authorize with confidence, enable continuous ATO. The pitch needs to focus on reducing their risk and enabling speed. Something like, Stop accepting risk based on three-year-old paperwork and vendor attestations. We provide independent, automated, binary-level verification evidence directly to you continuously. This transforms your role from a bottleneck into a mission accelerator by giving you the real-time, verifiable proof needed to confidently grant and maintain continuous ATO.
Okay, that's compelling for the AO persona too. The Chief Information Security Officer, the CISO, their perspective is broader, enterprise-wide.
Right. The CISO is juggling multiple major challenges. They're responsible for overall enterprise compliance with all these mandates, EO 14028, M2218, NIST CSCRM guidance. They're deeply concerned about third-party risk from all the CLI-tight software they use, and they're dealing with the operational pain of SOC alert fatigue, analyst burnout, and the sprawl of too many point solutions. They crave consolidation and efficiency.
So the message needs to address compliance, third-party risk, and operational efficiency.
Exactly. The message is, consolidate your software assurance, verify everything. The pitch emphasizes the platform advantage. Spectra Assure provides a single platform to meet your EDO 14028, compliance needs verifying the software you buy through CSCRM analysis and the software you build via SSDF validation, generating the proof needed for the OMB attestations. Simultaneously, our intelligence, detect, and analyze capabilities will supercharge your SOC, eliminating false positives and finding the sophisticated threats your legacy tools are missing. It's presented as an integrated enterprise risk management solution.
Makes sense. Finally, Persona 3, the DevSecOps lead or the software factory director, the builders.
These are the folks on the front lines of delivery. Their biggest enemy is friction. They're constantly battling security tools that slow down their pipelines, the SaaS SCA noise we talked about. They worry about their own build systems being compromised, like CodeCuff. And they resent the manual toil involved in generating all the compliance artifacts, SBOMs, risk reports needed to satisfy the AO for Cato.
They just want to build and ship secure code faster, with less hassle.
That's it. So the message for them is, secure the binary, not just the code. Go faster. The pitch needs to emphasize speed, accuracy, and automation. We're less disruptive because we focus on the final artifact, finding real threats like malware, tampering, and exposed secrets, not just low-level code flaws that create noise. And critically, we automate the generation of the validated SBOMs and risk reports your AO needs for Cato, turning a manual compliance chore into an automated benefit that helps you ship faster.
Tailoring the message to the AO's confidence, the CISO's consolidation needs, and the DevSecOps lead's velocity goals seems crucial. Okay, we've covered the how awardable status and the who personas. What about the where? Which specific agencies and use cases represent the highest priority targets? The sources suggest a tiered approach.
Yes, focusing efforts is key in the vast federal landscape. Tier one is, unequivocally, the Department of Defense, DOD, and the intelligence community, IC. Three main reasons. The stakes are highest, software integrity directly impacts warfighting capability and national security missions. Second, that awardable status provides the immediate streamlined procurement path, reducing friction. And third, the need for Cato acceleration is most acute within DoD software factories.
Within DoD and IC, what are the specific high-priority use cases?
Several key ones. First, target the program executive offices, PEOs, and program managers, PMs, across the services, Air Force, Army, Navy. Their critical use case is weapon system and embedded software integrity. They acquire or oversee the development of software for extremely complex, high-consequence systems like fighter jets, ships, ground vehicles, missile systems. They must verify the integrity of every component. Spectra Assure is positioned as the tool to help them buy safe for these critical mission systems.
Okay, PEOs and weapons systems. What else in Tier 1?
The dedicated software factories and major DevSecOps programs. Think Platform One, Kessel Run, Army Software Factory, Navy initiatives like Forge. Their core use case is Cato acceleration and CICD pipeline security. They are the builders pushing the envelope on speed, and they are the primary customers for Cato enablement. Spectra Assure helps them build safe and automates the evidence generation for the AO.
Any others in Tier 1?
Yes. Don't forget the Defense Industrial Base, DIB. Over 300,000 companies supporting the DoD need to comply with CMMC 2.0, which requires proving they secure controlled unclassified information, CUI. Verifying the integrity of the software they develop and use is part of that. Spectra Assure offers a way to generate that verifiable proof. And finally, the elite cyber commands and intelligence agencies like US Cybercom and NSA.
What's the focus for them?
While Assure is relevant, the emphasis might shift slightly more towards Spectra. Analyze the high-end private forensic workbench for dissecting the most sophisticated nation-state malware in Spectra intelligence, leveraging that massive file reputation database for advanced threat hunting, attribution, and indicator enrichment.
Okay, that's a clear picture for Tier 1 Duty C. What about Tier 2? The sources list DHS and DOJ.
Right. Tier 2 is the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and the Department of Justice, DOJ. The alignment here is strong due to their critical infrastructure protection and law enforcement missions.
For DHS, especially CISA.
The key use case is critical infrastructure protection, CIP. CISA leads the effort to secure the 16 critical infrastructure sectors nationally. A huge part of that is securing the information and communications technology, ICT, and operational technology, OT supply chains that underpin that infrastructure. Spectra Assure can help CISA and critical infrastructure partners vet software for power grids, water systems, communications networks. Spectra Detect also fits the need for high-volume file analysis in their operational centers.
And for the Department of Justice, like the FBI.
The primary use case is digital forensics and malware analysis. As we discussed, the FBI's cyber and counterintelligence teams need to analyze malware found in investigations. And here, that unique capability of Spectra Analyze running as a private, non-cloud workbench is absolutely critical. It allows them to handle sensitive evidentiary files without violating legal or chain of custody requirements. That privacy feature is a major selling point for DOJ-FBI.
Got it. Tiers 1 and 2 seem very well defined. Tier 3 includes civilian critical infrastructure agencies like HHS, DOE, DOT.
Yes. While they might not have the same rapid procurement vehicles as DOD, the consequences of software failure in their domains are just as high, impacting national welfare and public safety. They face the same fundamental CSCRM challenges when buying third-party software.
Let's take HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, as an example again. What's their specific pain point?
Their mission revolves around protecting patient health information. PHI, and ensuring the safety and integrity of healthcare systems. Think about hospitals procuring new MRI machines, or adopting new EHR software, or deploying pharmacy management systems. All these contain complex software, often from third parties. HHS needs to ensure compliance with the IPAI security rule, which includes protecting PHI from unauthorized access or tampering.
So Spectra Assure helps them vet that medical device software or EHR system before it handles patient data.
Exactly. It provides that verifiable integrity check on the binary software embedded in the device or system, ensuring it hasn't been tampered with or backdoored, helping protect sensitive patient data and ensure patient safety.
What about the Department of Energy, DOE? Their focus is often OT and physical systems.
Right. Their major pain point is operational technology, OT, and SCADA security, particularly protecting the U.S. energy grid. They deal with a lot of legacy industrial control systems, ICS, and OT assets that are critical but often fragile and hard to update. A huge risk is validating software patches and updates for these systems.
So reversing labs can check the patches before they're deployed.
Yes. Spectra Assure can analyze the patch package itself to ensure it's legitimate, hasn't been corrupted, and doesn't contain malware before it gets installed on a critical controller in a power plant or substation. This helps prevent potentially catastrophic cyber-physical attacks initiated through a malicious update.
That's a critical use case.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the Department of Transportation, DOT.
For DOT, safety is paramount, and cybersecurity is now inextricably linked to safety. Their focus is securing increasingly complex and interconnected cyber-physical transportation systems. Think aviation control systems, railway signaling and control, connected vehicles, autonomous driving platforms.
They need to verify the software embedded in these safety-critical systems.
Absolutely. They need assurance that the third-party software components managing braking, navigation, or traffic control haven't been compromised by malware or unauthorized tampering. Spectra Assure becomes a tool for providing that digital safety assurance for the transportation sector.
That tiered approach, combined with the persona-based messaging and leading with the procurement advantages, it paints a really comprehensive go-to-market strategy for the federal space.
It seems very well thought out in the source materials. The goal is clearly to position Reversing Labs not merely as another security vendor, but as an essential platform for mission enablement and risk reduction across the entire federal government.
Moving agencies beyond just vulnerability scanning.
Beyond the superficial checkbox compliance mentality.
Towards genuine, verifiable software assurance.
Right. The final synthesis that comes through is that this platform, focusing on binary level analysis, is uniquely positioned to provide that high fidelity assurance across the full life cycle. It offers the technological underpinnings for agencies to truly implement a secure by design, secure by default posture, as the mandates call for.
Allowing them to achieve that goal of build safe, buy safe, and stay safe.
And by doing so, unlocking the mission velocity that the old static trust-based compliance methods simply couldn't deliver.
Which brings us then to our final provocative thought for you, our listeners, to consider. In this current era, where everything national security, economic stability, public safety hinges so critically on the integrity of software, the fundamental question federal leaders need to ask themselves is changing.
It's no longer sufficient to ask the process-driven, somewhat superficial question. How many known vulnerabilities did our scanners find?
The real question, the one with profound consequences, the one that should drive policy, investment, and action, has become much sharper.
It's now. Can we independently verify at the binary level with high confidence that the mission-critical software systems we depend on every single second have not been secretly, maliciously, and intentionally tampered with by a sophisticated adversary?
Achieving that level of verifiable assurance, that seems to be the new baseline requirement for security in the modern age.
It really does. That's the standard we need to reach.
A very detailed and actionable deep dive today. Thank you for synthesizing that complex landscape of mandates, technology, and strategy for us.
My pleasure. It's a critical topic. And as the technology evolves, the need for verification only grows.
Indeed. And thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.